Hello, lovers.
Roses are red, violets are blue. We really want to share our conversation hearts with you.
Welcome to Likewise's Week of Love, with a new guest every day. I'm Issa.
And I'm Sam. And we're so excited for you to join us and our author, Galentines, while we share our love for romance books.
What can I say? We love love.
We are so excited to be kicking off our Valentine's Week of Love special for Likewise. We had so much fun with Podmas, and we kind of said we weren't going to do daily episodes again until the next Podmas, but we just couldn't help it and thought Valentine's Day was the perfect time to have all of our author besties come on the podcast with us. And so today for our first episode, which is going to be so exciting because, I don't know, we might just be like giving some hot takes today. We have one of our very first author besties, actually, Tessa. And if you haven't listened to our first episode we did with Tessa back in November, you should listen to that after this one, because this one's more important right now. But if you listen to that one, you'll learn more about her debut novel, No Coincidences. But today we're just going to be like talking about tropes and things we don't like and all that good stuff. So Tessa, I'll let you introduce yourself more if there's anything you want to say about yourself for our listeners.
Hi, I'm Tessa DiRico, self-published indie author, known hater of tropes, notorious hater. So excited to be kicking off your week of love by talking about things that I despise.
Right.
I'm so excited.
It's honestly, it's just love, like, hate. Yes.
Yeah. Well, we can circle back to talking about things we love about tropes.
Right.
I mean, if we have to, I guess.
The short list.
Well, honestly, love that intro. Tessa, iconic as always.
Thank you.
And before we really get into the nitty-gritty of it, what we honestly hate about tropes, or, you know, maybe we like it, we love some things, don't know, find out later. We're gonna do our roses and thorns. So Sam, what are your roses and thorns for this week?
Okay, mine's actually not really about this week. It's a very in the moment rose and thorn. Both my rose and my thorn are the same thing right now, and it's that I'm like absurdly caffeinated at the moment, and so it's like, it's a good thing because I'm like really excited to record, but it's kind of a bad thing because I feel like there's been a few episodes where Issa and I have like, either one of us has gotten super caffeinated throughout, and like it just kind of sometimes it interrupts the brain flow and I might just be a little chaotic, so I'm scared, but it's like a good feeling right now because I just feel very energetic. Tessa, what are your roses and thorns?
My thorn is that my classes start tomorrow. So, and I have an 8 a.m. So that'll be just delightful to wake up for that. But my rose is that I'm happy to be back on campus with my friends. We saw a movie last night and we went to a museum this morning. And then I'm getting Mexican food tonight. So yeah, I'm just social butterflying away.
Oh my gosh, that's so fun. I'm also getting Mexican food tonight.
Oh my god.
What's my thorn? My thorn. I guess it's just that I had to like wake up early today. But honestly, I don't feel like super tired right now. Like I was tired earlier and I told Sam, I was like, I feel so sleepy. But I feel fine. So I guess that's a rose. And then also I'm getting Mexican tonight. So another rose. Yay.
Love that. I don't know what I'm having for dinner tonight.
Maybe get Mexican.
That's too good. Well, all right. So obviously on our minds during Valentine's Day and kind of that season of love is like romance books, all that stuff. And so we were just kind of thinking about, okay, honestly guys, have to be so transparent here. This episode is super inspired by Tessa posting a story about like grumpy sunshine trope and like marketing things as like reverse grumpy sunshine, and just thinking about the overarching topic of tropes. So we figured we would start by trying to define trope because for some reason it's so difficult. Like, why can't I find a definition of trope online?
Because it's a marketing tactic that people made up.
Literally, like, dictionary
Not helpful.
definition of trope is so different from what we think of tropes as. So yeah, I'm like, it's not real and it can be whatever we want. So I don't know. It's
I feel
strange.
like the first time in recent memory, like think about the past 5 years or so, I think what I associate with the word trope is there's only one bed. I feel like that's the first thing I heard people talking about, oh, that's a great trope. Like that's my first memory of people talking about it. Probably, I don't know, maybe more recently than 5 years ago. Maybe COVID, but that was also 4 years ago. So maybe
Right.
I was right with my initial guess and I just have no concept of time. But I feel like that is the first time I heard people on BookTok or Bookstagram talking about tropes. And before that, I think that I personally just thought tropes were something like, think of One Tree Hill or Riverdale, like love triangle, good girl, bad girl, cheerleaders, basketball, kind of that.
Character.
Yeah, more like a character, character arc archetype than something like there's only one bed.
Yeah, I feel like the first tropes that I really heard of were like, oh, enemies to lovers, or like friends to, like just like the basic. I mean, I love them, so I don't care that I'm calling them basic, but like the basic ones, you know? Or yeah, like similar to like what you're just saying, Tessa, like One Tree Hill or Riverdale or like any of those kinds of shows, and like the tropes or like just all the cliche things that happen. So it's like, ugh, not the. I can't even think of one. Or like the love triangle trope. Oh,
Girl
it's
next
so
door.
used. Girl next door. Yeah.
Yeah. I think about it with because before I was super into reading, I guess I was into 80s and 90s rom-coms when I was in middle school, high school. And so there was obviously a lot of similar, I mean, that was the age of extreme character archetypes. They're the same in every cheesy rom-com. So I kind of thought of it with that too, more of any descriptor of the relationship of a romance story. So now I guess, like Issa said, the enemies to lovers, whatever the blank to lovers is, I see as an overarching trope, of a story, because it's just giving you point blank, this is the relationship that happens in this story or something. It's just now you know exactly what to expect. So it's very interesting because I don't know, I kind of like going into things blind. So sometimes slapping 10,000 trope labels on something makes that difficult because I just know everything that's going to happen. Or I know every book that I'm reading, I'm already know if it has a one bed trope in it because it gets marketed that way. So then as I'm reading, I'm like, is this where the one bed happens? I'm already thinking that's where it's happening. So I don't know. It's very interesting. But I've just learned it can be whatever. And now
It
it's
really is
everything.
whatever.
It is everything
Yeah.
to the
It's
book
everywhere.
community online.
Yeah. I think it also is interesting thinking about just defining tropes as the blank to lovers. Everyone has their own definition of what that looks like. So if a book is marketed as enemies to lovers, and then people are like, well, they didn't try to kill each other, so they aren't really enemies. And I'm upset that this book was marketed to me as enemies to lovers. And I'm like, whoa. glad you have that opinion, but you can't really control how the book's written, or how it was marketed to you. But I feel like people have really strict definitions of what is friends to lovers, what is rivals to lovers, what is enemies to lovers. That when something is outside of those bounds, they're like, whoa, I was lied to, which I don't know if it's a totally fair thing to say about a book.
Right. I do think like this year, okay, I've seen so many things of people like feeling like they're lied to about like so many different kinds of media this year. So like most recent one I just said like in an episode a while back that I just seen the Wonka movie, and like my whole TikTok, everything, everyone was like, so who was going to tell me that the Wonka movie was a musical? Or like people at work were talking about like I was saying I really want to see the new Mean Girls movie, and then they're like, oh my gosh, like they're like looking it up and they're like, it's a musical. And I'm like, well, so here's the thing, like I mean Mean Girls has been like a musical for a while, so just like I don't know, it's so interesting. But I saw it with books a lot too, and like I think a big discussion this last year was people just feeling like certain authors' books have always been mismarketed, like people thinking that like I guess like Emily Henry books, they're like, oh, they need to stop being marketed as romance books and they need to be marketed as contemporary fiction. But I'm like, I don't know, because like I read it and I'm just like, yes, this is a great, like this is a rom-com to me.
Yeah, I feel like if the book is about the relationship, like a romantic relationship between two people, come on.
It can be
Like,
romance.
yeah. I think it also has something to do with like people's expectation for like smut in books, honestly.
Yeah.
I feel like that informs a person's opinion on what is a romance book versus what is like contemporary fiction, which is interesting. I've been thinking for a while, I feel like we're about to see like major pendulum swing on like smut in books with all of this stuff about like young girls reading like really smutty books that have misleading covers. Like I think in the next 2 or 3 years, like I don't know if it'll probably be more of a marketing thing than what like books, these type of books have always been written. Like having smut in books is not a new thing, but I think the way they're marketed, I think we're gonna see a shift in the next couple years.
I was thinking
Yeah.
about that because, like, I think yesterday was the first day I saw on TikTok these people were like me watching all these like Christmas videos of like 12-year-olds getting icebreaker under their tree because like their moms just bought it for them thinking like the cover was cute, and I was
Yeah.
like, whoa, like I didn't even think about that because like I'm not a parent of like middle schooler, but if I was shopping for a book for my kid, I could see how you could easily buy a book like Icebreaker thinking that it was a YA book because, like, I guess just cover design trends, like it looks like a YA book cover, like, or how YA books have been with their covers for years. So it is very interesting. I'm like, what are they gonna do? Like, are they gonna start putting like peppers on the back of the books? Are they gonna,
Right.
you know?
Yeah. And I think about the books that I read that were like quote unquote inappropriate for my books I read in middle school that had like were about high schoolers or were about like drinking and partying and sex and like Flowers in the Attic, which is like the most controversial book that was like actually marketed towards young girls, and even though it did have all these like heavy themes and like incest and all this stuff's going on and it's super dark, but it was marketed towards a younger audience and I was just like, this doesn't make sense to me. So I was thinking about it, and I think the difference is like why I don't feel like I was that traumatized by reading Flowers in the Attic at like 13, 14 years old, but I think the difference is that like the scenes in Flowers in the Attic, the scenes in like other books that I was reading that were for young adults but covered mature topics weren't meant to be erotic. But I think there are parts of
Yeah.
some of these books that are meant to be erotic, and that's the difference. And I think that's where the like nuance of the situation lies that I don't know if everyone's picking up on.
Yeah, and like an arc that Sam and I read beginning of January, like the I was like looking through the author's like Instagram page and just looking at it, and she said like I don't know, like one of the reels is like, so why'd you write a closed door romance? And she's like, because I want to prove that it doesn't, like, a book doesn't need to have the smut to like be good for people to read it and stuff. I was like, ooh. So now I wonder, like, okay, yes, like everyone's like, oh my gosh, give me smut, like all the things. I'm like, whoa. Sometimes it's a lot. A lot of times it's a lot, and I'm like, I don't know how much I really want to read this. But so yeah, like Tessa, like you were saying earlier, I feel like there is going to be like a big pendulum swing, kind of taking us away from where we are right now and kind of going more to like closed door, just be like, no, this is still readable. This is still good stuff.
And I do wonder how much that'll affect like tropes. I feel like, especially enemies to lovers, I don't know why that one specifically, but I feel like so many of like the tropes associated with that trope are like sexual in a way. So it's just interesting. Because right. Like, what if you have an enemies lovers book that's like YA? I don't know. I don't lovers. I should stop talking about it because I have like no examples to pull from. I have nothing.
Right. Or like, because sometimes it still even has that element. Because I think with enemies to lovers, you almost have where it gets the line in most enemies to lovers books, the line gets crossed with something sexual before they even stop being enemies and really become lovers. Like, it's like that's like the halfway point in a lot of these books for the like relationship. And so it is interesting. Like, I'm thinking, I mean, I have read some YA enemies to lovers, but it is, I guess, only fantasy too, so that played a difference in it as well. But it's still almost like assumed, like it gets like mentioned in a way where it's not like that descriptive or really a part of it, but it like leaves it for you to assume that something happened between them. So interesting. I've never thought about that. Well, I hadn't seen, honestly, until this year, many books being marketed as like new adult, like versus just like YA or like adult, or just saying like contemporary romance or like whatever. So I've liked that addition because I think sometimes you have, I mean, kids hitting like high school age not wanting to read books that are like YA because maybe they were reading them in middle school and they're in high school and they just make the jump to like very like erotic books because there's just like nothing in between, or like, I don't know, there's not a lot that's like really marketed to that age group of like high school through college, in my opinion. It just kind of like it was missing. I felt like it wasn't there when I was that age.
Yeah, I agree. And the stuff that is there is hard to find. Like, I remember when I was querying No Coincidences, like back when I thought I wanted to do like traditional publishing, I was looking for comp titles, and it was so hard to find a book about college students that wasn't like new adult and like smutty. Like, it was there are some out there, but it's very like you really have to look for them, and some of them are like still like the characters are very young, like a character skips a grade and ends up in college, you know. Like, it's just, it's not an oversaturated market, that's for sure. I mean, there's not a lot out there, and it's, I guess it, maybe it's hard to market. I maybe like the marketing gods behind all these publishing companies know more than us, but maybe they don't. They might not.
Right. I think, okay, it's like such a thing that, in my opinion, that people at like publishing companies, all this stuff, the marketing there, I'm pretty sure, because this is how it works with like almost everything in the world, just like waits to see what's like, what these buzzwords and like things that are trending in like these indie spaces are, and then take that a little bit later after the fact and like make it their marketing push. Like, think about Barnes and Noble starting having like a book talk table in their stores. Like, that's just a result of like obviously people talking book talk books, deciding that like these were like hugely popular books, especially during COVID was like the huge, huge time there. But I don't know, it's kind of like they just wait to see what everybody in this like online community decides is the terms, and then it's there.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. I think like a lot of, you know, traditionally published places and like big bookstores or any bookstores really, like they just look at what's trending now, and they're not really looking towards like, okay, what's gonna be trending in the future, like what can we make trend, like how can we start a trend for the future and all the things. And so that's why I love like indie books, because it's like, no, those like indie books are the trendsetters. Like, they're the ones who like sweep the nation, because people are like, oh my gosh, have you heard about this book? No. Well, this is so good, like read this or whatever. And honestly, I'm pretty sure that's how like hockey romances, where did those come from? don't know, like they've been around for a while, but also they only, I mean, I've only noticed them become really big like over this past year, and it was all because of all the indie hockey romances.
Yeah, and I saw this tweet. I wish I remembered like the actual book, but someone had found this book in a bookstore that had like cartoon characters on the cover. It was like a hockey romance, and it was marketed as like, if you love Icebreaker, you're gonna, if you love Elle Kennedy, you're gonna love this. And it was actually a book that had been written in 2007 and published through Avon Books, which is one of those like weekly, monthly, like subscription packages, like kind of like Harley Quinn. They might be owned by Harley Quinn, honestly. And it, they had just like, the publishers were like, oh wait, this is trending now. And they like repackaged the cover and made it from like a mass market, like small copy to a trade, big copy. Like, it's just insane that we like, you would never know unless you were familiar with the title and the author, I guess, that it wasn't a debut novel or like a new novel.
That is so wild. Oh my word.
That's like so cool. Okay. It also makes me think of like bookstores doing like blind date with a book. Like tropes really got brought into that because when you like wrap it up, like all they put is like the genre, published date, and then like either just tropes or like a baby synopsis that like doesn't give too much away to where you know exactly what book it is. So that's interesting.
Yeah, I feel like tropes are like a nice way to say buzzwords. Like it's like,
yeah,
yeah,
a sweeter sounding way to say key. It's like vocab words, like
right, it's your SEO keywords.
Yeah, like clearly.
I decided it could be good to revisit our favorite topic from our first episode with Tessa, because it did get brought up again in our guest episode with Sierra, because we have thoughts on micro tropes. And so I think we should revisit them, because at the time, I think we were like, what even is a micro trope? Which like is still kind of a thought now. I still feel that way. But yeah. Like, I don't know. I think micro tropes and tropes are becoming just like the same thing right now, a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. And some of these micro tropes, I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, micro trope, he drives a car. Like, what? What do you mean? And some of them are like really specific scenes. And I made a TikTok, like, trying to be funny, but I guess my humor just didn't read to the viewers, but trying to be like, what is a micro trope? Like, someone needs to put it like, you, sorry, that was my phone falling off my desk. I was like, you need to explain to me what a micro trope is. Like, somebody needs to put into like, actually explain to me why are you using this word, what are you doing? And I got a couple comments that were like, so a trope is a reoccurring theme in a book, and a micro trope is just a smaller version of that trope. I'm like, no, baby, I know what a trope is. Thank you so much for being helpful. I was trying to be funny, though. Like, thank you so much for trying to explain this to me. Like, this was a genuine question, but I was just being sarcastic. But yeah, but even that, even like, I got like 2 or 3 comments on that of people being like, it's this. And even those, I was like, really? Is it like a smaller version of a trope? I didn't know tropes had like a size quantity. Like, how do you measure a trope? Like, what is a smaller version of a trope?
Right.
Not really a quantitative term.
Yeah. Yeah. And we got into it a little bit like with Sierra when we were talking about micro tropes and how when it's like so specific to the book that it's like, that's not a micro trope, that's just a scene that happens, that's just something that is so specific to yours. Like, what, like, okay, I guess like micro tropes, like, oh, he's a baker, like, okay, I can kind of understand that being a micro trope because that's something, I guess, but is that not just part of his character?
Right.
But, and so like, are like characteristics of character or like traits of characters, like, are those tropes, or are the tropes just like the ideas in the book, like this of the settings, or like, yeah, that just opens like a whole bunch of other stuff that I'm like, but that pertains to like this other thing. So does it include like the settings, the people, the houses? I guess that's settings, but I don't know. Like, so where do you draw the line at what is and is not a trope?
It's, I don't know, it's so hard. And because I was trying to think about microtropes, and the only thing I could think of, I was like, is this just the same thing as a subtrope? Because then, like, in my head, I tried to do the quantifying thing. Okay, like, I was like, to make it make sense, I'm going to try the quantifying thing. And so my only example I could think of was that if you wanted to say big trope, like capital T trope in a book is forced
capital
proximity.
B big.
Right, capital B big, like big pharma, big trope, okay? Big trope here is forced proximity. And then micro trope would be one bed, because that's just like one example of forced proximity being like laid out. Like, it's how you make it happen, right? So like in my head, that's like the only way I made it make sense. But then like also one bed is one of the biggest like identifiable tropes that has been out there. Like we said, it was like one of the first uses we've been seeing in the last like however many years is people talking about one bed trope. But I've also, so random, microtropes have taught me that people read for very different reasons than me. Like, that is, I think, what I learned from it the most, because I would never think to like find books this way. And it's so fine. I'm like, you can have whatever taste you want. You can look for specific things from books, but never in my life have I thought I want to find a book where this really absurd specific scene happens. I love when this happens in books. Like, they're like, I just really love when he washes her hair and calls her this nickname. Give me book recs with this exact scene, because I just want this in every book I read. I'm like, I've just never had that thought. So I'm like, wait, okay, I'm just learning a lot of different things.
Does anyone have that thought though? Because I don't see I don't see readers posting, I'm looking for a micro trope or these books in the micro trope. It's the authors. Like,
oh yes, it's like someone like creating like a fake situation to then be like, my book or whatever, you know?
Yeah. No,
yeah, read my book if you love when this happens. It's like, I don't know.
I've
that
never
I don't
thought
that
about
happens,
that.
I've never
before.
Seen it. But honestly, it makes me a little uncomfy. So I don't know that I really want to anymore.
Yeah. No, I don't even know. I mean, I'd love to know where I actually did before this, like when we were talking about planning this episode. I looked up hashtag microtropes on Instagram because I was like, I have to like know. I have to try to find the origin. And there are under 100 posts. Hashtag microtrope. So maybe we're just like trapped in like a
vacuum. Trapped.
Maybe we are just couple like pieces of content, but I really couldn't find anything. And there were a couple tropes that are a couple posts about like microtropes that were as ridiculous as all of these examples we're talking about. But yeah, there like there wasn't a lot, and I was like, maybe I'm just chronically online now because I feel like I see this everywhere. But the literal hashtag microtrope only has under 100 posts.
So that was
the maybe people are just not using the hashtag microtrope. Maybe they're like,
probably.
Like, honestly,
they know. No, it's not a real
hashtags
thing.
And mismarketing their posts.
Yeah, they know. They're not using the hashtag because they know it's not going to, like, no one's searching hashtag microtropes for book recommendations. Like, it's wild to me.
Hashtag absolutely insane experience that has only ever happened in one book that I'm really hoping is in more than one book.
Yeah.
Right. And like, I'm all for reading a book for a specific scene. I did just reread House of Hades for the scenes where Percy and Annabeth are like walking through hell together. Like, I was literally just like looking for like a few couple scenes, like scrolling through the book on my Kindle, like, okay, this is all I'm here for. I just need to read this. But you get to the point where there are two paths you can take on this, which is, one, you need to read more fan fiction. Like, if you're looking for like shorter, tropier, scene-based fiction, like writing, maybe you need to read more fan fiction, or just write it yourself. Like, you have so many ideas where you're like, oh my God, I really need a book where I can't even think of anything, where like she breaks her desk and he comes over and buys her a new laptop because he's a billionaire and sits with her on the floor and does work with her, does her work from home with her because he feels awful that her desk broke. Like, if you have that thought in your head, like, oh my God, I'd love to read a book where that happens, you just need to write it, babe. Like,
yeah, that's just you needing to write a book.
You need to write it. You can't find
that's
it.
That's so funny.
You just need to write it. So that's why I think it's coming from authors, because I find it hard to believe in that anyone thinks that way.
Right. I do think, like, it has been, like, for some people, I think it probably has actually really helped them market their book, because we are kind of like, I don't know, it seems like we're in this day and age where, like, we just have to keep testing the most random things to try to, like, push books out there to the, like, audience it needs to find. And so it's just like, you kind of just have to try everything. And instead of just like being like, oh, here's a scene, or like something from a scene from my book, now it's just like, ooh, since tropes are so popular, here's like micro tropes. And it's just like, gives you a little more info. And so I think it has helped some people, or gotten some people to read their books. But I think sometimes I'm more confused, or I'm more likely, in my case, I guess, to not read the book, because then I feel like I already know everything, which, yeah. I don't know, that's been happening to me a lot recently. Like, a lot of people, like, I think with like Reels and TikToks, I have started to notice that I know every scene. I know every scene now. And I know like the best quote from that scene. And I'm like, oh, so like, what if I'm like reading it and now like I don't even have that like gut like punching feeling of when a quote just hits so hard, because I already saw that the best quote of your book on Instagram.
Right. No, it's hard. I definitely agree. I feel like some people post so many quotes, and maybe it's just because, I don't know, I do my own marketing. I know some people have like people running their social media, and it's kind of like, you have, when you feel like you have an unbiased set of eyes on your writing, it might be easier to market. But there are only a few things for my book that I'm like, yeah, this is gonna sell the book. Like, I just don't have that many, and maybe it's just because I wrote it and I feel like I know it so well, but I don't know. I worry also about like digital footprint. Like, what if you're not an author one day, where like, and people are still like tagging you in Reels about like scenes from a book? I don't know. Especially when the lines are like multiple pieces of dialogue pulled from multiple scenes. It kind of freaks me out. But also respect the grind. Like, if that's working, obviously it's working for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Like, no judgment.
It's just wild. It really is. I'm trying to think. There's just so many I saw recently. I think I've like gotten in like a spot where I've just like been looking for people like intensely defending microtropes, and that's where I saw people being like, I just really like reading books where this happens. I'm just, okay. I just love, like, I don't know, I love what I get out of like bigger themes of books, I think, more than the little details.
Right.
For me. So I don't know. Microtrope hater.
I am a microtrope hater. That should be my new Instagram.
Proud.
Proud microtrope hater. I wear it like a badge of honor. And I think it's also, I mean, I could talk about this for like a whole nother podcast episode, but like, you need to write what you want to write. You need, if you are writing a book, you need to not think about what anyone else is doing. You need to not think about how you're going to market your book. That's a later problem. You will find your audience. Like, you just need to write it, and you need to be honest, and you need to be genuine. And if you're trying to pigeonhole yourself into like, oh, well, how am I going to market this unless I make it friends to lovers, enemies to lovers? like that can't be good for you.
Yeah, I'm like trying to like stick in little microtropes that are just like popular.
Right. Yeah, exactly. If you're working on a book and you see everyone on Instagram is talking about, oh my God, I love when a desk breaks and he has to come over and bring her a new laptop. Like, and then you're like, oh my God, wait, that's perfect for my book. And you try to slide it in there. Like, it's just don't. Please, if anyone's listening to this.
Yeah. I mean, not to get into a campus crush too, but I just feel like Isabel is a for sure microtrope hater.
Oh, she so is. She's a classics girl. Like, I feel like Isabel definitely thinks she's more intellectual than she is. Like, she's definitely like a normal amount of smart, but she definitely is very pretentious. And I think she's very like uppity. And I can't picture Isabel even reading like a contemporary romance novel. She's probably reading like Dostoevsky. Like I don't know if she's understanding it, but she has it in her backpack. And she puts it on the table at lunch so it looks like she's been reading it. But definitely for sure.
She just has the like audiobook on in the background but isn't actually listening to it. Like,
oh, sorry, let me take my earphones out. Just listening to Dostoevsky. Sorry. No, go ahead. Please interrupt. I don't know why I'm like almost doing a British accent.
I just feel like it's just connected. Like when you start thinking about like kind of like that like academic vibe and you're thinking about like somebody like, I think it's just an American point of view. I feel like when you start like imagining a pretentious character, you just think of like a British person, which is so bad to say.
We hate microtropes and we hate British people. They're both.
That is a hot take.
I was doing like a photo shoot for work and just like to make small talk with the models. The stylist was like, what's your favorite accent? And then everybody, instead of talking about their favorite, was talking about their least favorite. And my friend was just like, not gonna lie, I hate British accents. And I was just like, whoa. And so, yeah, she was like, I can't even watch British TV. And I was like,
oh my God.
I love British TV.
I do love British TV. I love British people, but I love Irish people more. So like, there's always, you know, a bit of animosity there.
There's something. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Isabel would hate microtropes. For sure.
She would. But microtropes don't exist in like the fictional world where...
Right, no, campus crush world where like the pandemic never happened, like the world is at peace. Microtrope doesn't exist, yeah.
Love it.
Sure. The world will not be at peace once microtrope is introduced, too.
Can you imagine if in my next book I was like super meta with it, like... We're reading this book about these college students. It's just so unrealistic. Microtrope.
It's so funny.
Oh my word.
Well, I think our other big topic is TikTok, which is just so... gets us fired up, honestly. I mean, we haven't tried to do like a whole lot of marketing on TikTok, so we can only imagine the experience you've had. I mean, I've tried like a little bit, like randomly promote the podcast on my personal TikTok, but like we just have not done anything mm-hmm. besides that.
Yeah, Tessa, we know you've got some big feelings about TikTok.
I do have big feelings about TikTok. I've been trying into like be more zen about it because I tried to post a bunch of content last week and almost all of it got taken down for breaking community guidelines. And I was like, I'm just talking about my book. But then I guess I like in talking about the book, you know, you have to talk about some mature themes, I guess, that were just too mature for TikTok. But also I've definitely posted about them before. I don't know. I tried to post a slideshow of my favorite Maisie Peters lyrics and that got taken down for community guidelines. And I was like, that was the moment I gave up. I was like in bed and that was the moment I was like, I'm gonna stop putting time and effort into TikTok.
That's terrible. I feel like I just haven't even like I think I had one thing run into that one time, and it was the most ridiculous like thing I posted. It was like I think it was like something that was just like on my t-shirt. And I don't even
Oh.
have anything that's like bad. So I don't know.
Actually, Sam, we all know you. We know how scandalous your clothes are. How out of pocket they are.
I'm wearing a like the 1975 t-shirt, and TikTok's like, oop, oop, nope, can't wear that, canceled.
Yeah,
Like,
they're just trying to look out for you.
right.
Just trying to stop you from getting canceled. Yeah, no, I don't know. I definitely feel like I started my author TikTok before my author Instagram. And when I started my Instagram, I was like, oh my God, wait, where has this been? Like TikTok, it's so hard to like build a community and like interact with people. But Instagram, it's so easy. So I remember just once I got on Instagram, I was like, screw TikTok. Like BookTok, I don't know. They're a wild bunch over there. They like a couple books.
That's for sure.
That's for sure. They really like a couple books and a couple authors, but I feel like it's much easier for indie authors to promote on Instagram and to build community, because that's what I'm but if anyone's keeping up with the Threads drama, this whole thing about like community, building a community, you have to post about more than your book. It's like literally impossible to do that on TikTok. And it kind of seems like no one wants to, which I'm sure isn't true. But when people only post about the same couple books and the same couple authors, you
It's
wonder.
boring. It's boring real quick. And like TikTok is just, I mean, it's not a secret. It's so random, like what goes like viral or like what gets big or like what's trending and stuff. Whereas like Instagram, yeah, it probably takes like a lot more work, but there's like that steady build and it's easier, yeah, like you said, to build community and to actually have like people follow you and to have people invested in all the things. Whereas TikTok, it's random. It's like you're a one-hit wonder on TikTok if you're lucky.
Right. Yeah, no, it's hard. And I also, but I feel like I don't see the same, like, I don't see microtropes on BookTok. Maybe I'm just not on the right side of BookTok, but
No, you're definitely on the right side of BookTok if you don't see the microtropes there.
true. I'm on my side of BookTok. I'm in like my own little corner, living my life. But yeah, no, I feel like that's the interesting thing about TikTok is it knows what you like and what you don't. But then Instagram, if you follow someone and they post about microtropes, you're like, what? Like you have no choice. You have to look at it. You have no
Right.
choice.
Yeah, I've not seen it on my BookTok. My BookTok is wild though. Like, I will say I'm only on the side of BookTok of people like only talking about like the biggest controversies. Like, that's all mine is. So it's but microtropes have not been a concern of the people talking about controversial book talk things. So
I feel like I should start the. I feel like I should be like
the leader.
I should
Yes.
lead,
Tessa, be the drama.
be the drama. I would. I like. There are some things that I don't like. I know no one needs to hear my opinion on. Microtros is not one of them. Like I will not. This is not a secret. I will. I mean. When you guys were talking about my grumpy sunshine story earlier, my like Instagram story, where I was like, what is reverse grumpy sunshine? Like, when did we decide that grumpy sunshine meant the man is grumpy and the woman is the sunshiny one? And I think that's like the root of my problem with it is so many of these like micro tropes and tropes are rooted in like just awful gender roles or expectations from the genre that a lot of books don't uphold anymore. So much so that like I never see grumpy sunshine. It's always reverse grumpy sunshine. So obviously there's an interest in taking these tropes and flipping them on their head. But now it's just the standard again. Like, I don't
Yeah.
really know. I think that's my problem with it, like more than anything, is that it says a lot about what readers expect from the genre that I don't really agree with.
True.
That's a great take. And what was I thinking about that? Yeah, like just like reverse grumpy sunshine is the norm now. Oh yeah, just like the thought, like why, what about grumpy sunshine? Like where's that mix happening? Where's
I don't think I've ever seen grumpy, but I want that actually. That sounds so fun.
Yeah, actually grumpy, so low-key book lovers a little bit, because I feel like they were both
a little bit, yeah,
a little bit. I don't know, but that's just because they were like giving, they just didn't like each other, like that's why they were grumpy.
But
they
like
just,
it was only with each other. It wasn't like just that's who they are.
Yeah.
And that's also something I have a problem with, like Grumpy Sunshine. Like, I love Grumpy Sunshine. I think it's so fun. But usually what I've seen, like what I've experienced is like, it's grumpy only with this one person or only with like a couple people, instead of like, no, the exception to the rule should not make them grumpy. It should be like, no, they're always grumpy, except maybe a couple people here and there. Not.
I agree. And I also think that like the reverse grumpy, like, I think that like usually a grumpy man is like straight up mean to the female love interest, like not a nice person. And for a woman to be grumpy, it's like, oh, she's career driven, or oh, she doesn't want a relationship. And I'm just like, no, I want her to be mean. Like,
yes,
if you're going to say grumpy sunshine, he better be more than just, oh, he's nice to her and she's career driven. Like that bothers me. And I think that you can do a lot more with it. And like, if you are going to do reverse grumpy sunshine, she better be nasty.
Yes, I agree. Oh my gosh. I don't want someone just like, oh, they're in a bad mood, or like, oh, they're just like not approachable because they're focused on this other thing. No, I just want them to be not approachable because that's who they are. And then the sunshine's their way in.
Yeah, that's the point. It's not interesting once you do that, but then it's such like a buzzword that people just smack it onto things because they think it'll like gather interest, and it does, but just, it says a lot. It says a lot.
It does.
About gender roles. You'd think that a genre so focused on creating content for women, by women, you know, this space that does not have a lot of men in it, you'd think that we would be thinking a bit more out of the box, but one day.
The one whole day, like,
Tessa, write it. You want to see it? Write it.
But, yeah. And honestly, though, Isabel is pretty, she's not grumpy, but she's cold. Like, she's not like a super warm person, but yeah, maybe I will. I will write it.
Super no more
FMC.
That's so funny. That just like made me think when you're saying that, like things written by women. I was like, oh, woman or man written by a woman. That like whole like, yeah. Quote. I mean, I love saying that personally. Sometimes I'm like, that's so fun to say. But then like, it doesn't make you think, wait, we say that all the time. So like, why are we feeding into some of these other things? So.
Right. Yeah. We could do tropes. We do like.
Okay, wait, I've actually been thinking about this a lot recently though, like just from like filling out forms and having to put like my favorite tropes and least favorite tropes or whatever. I was starting to make my list, and with like the tropes I didn't like, I still found myself wanting to like not put them down, because like it's just such like specific reasons why I do or don't like it. Or like I'm like, well, I don't necessarily want to put like enemies to lovers as my favorite, because I'm like, what if I don't want it in every situation?
Right.
Like, what if I don't like the like rest of the stuff about it? So it was just very interesting. Cause I'm like, oh, it's very like context is needed with tropes sometimes.
Sure. I'm sure most people in the world have read a very good enemies to lovers book and a very good friends to lovers book. And I'm sure most people in the world have read a book that's enemies to lovers that they didn't like that much and friends to lovers that they didn't like that much.
Right.
So that's all. I think it's also part of like, and maybe it's just an online thing. People seem to have like no sense of nuance anymore, or context, and just can't seem to, which I'm guilty of at times too. Like you read something and you're like, oh my God, that's crazy. And you don't have context because you're just seeing a couple of words on
that's
threads or whatever. I'm really done with threads. I'm
Oh, threads. We love threads. We their threads era.
Well, okay, threads is getting a little wild though. I will say, like, I've been starting to see it. Like, I'm like, I see people like addressing drama that's happening that I have not seen yet. Right. So I'm like, wait. And then like now I'm learning that there's a huge discussion about like authors having newsletters.
What?
That's new.
We don't have time for this.
Right, yeah, you'll see that later. Just know that's coming.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, no, it's very hard. And I do feel like tropes are like a very online thing. I don't know. Like, I growing up, I can't think of what I liked to read. I read everything. And I, you know, when you go through phases, like I had a huge like YA mystery phase. Like, I loved anything that had like a dead high schooler in it. I ate that up. So, you know, I don't know what my favorite trope is now. I will say, maybe because I'm like, it's pretty much all I write, but like second chance romance, you can't go wrong with. Love. There's just something so great about like two characters have at once liked each other and then get to like re-fall in love with each other. Like, that's just so beautiful. And getting to like discover someone that you've known in like a different light, I think is really great. And it's also, I feel like, the most true to life out of other tropes. Like, a lot of people can relate to it, or a lot of people hope to, you know, reconnect with someone from their past again. So I feel like I'm always more drawn to second chance romance as a writer and a reader.
Oh, Tessa, tell us more. Check it.
Yeah, I almost put something on my Instagram story, like my main Instagram story the other day, that was like, I like, if you don't like second chance romance, like, you don't read book one, don't read plan on reading book two, like don't do it, because I'm not a very adventurous person. As far as that goes, like, if you're reading a Tessa DiRico book, you're probably reading a second chance romance, and that's okay. That's my brand now.
That's so cute. I love that.
Love that so much, because actually this year I think I discovered that like I love second chance romance so much, and I might like, I almost even like put it as my like favorite trope, because sometimes like you still have those elements of those other ones, like you still have like maybe that like enemies to lovers elements, or you find that you have that like friends to lovers element happening, because like maybe it's like they kind of become friends again, or it's like they're in a phase where they're like no contact or hate each other or whatnot. So you kind of get like all the things you could love from your other favorite tropes could be happening in this like greater story of people reconnecting. So I love it.
Oh yeah, me too. I just love.
Me too. And that's what also, like, I feel like sometimes enemies to lovers, I'm just like, just love each other already. Like, especially when there's like no hint of any sort of like relationship, it's like, oh, guys, please, for me, love each other.
I think like that's a big reason why I really don't like love triangles. And also, I just discovered, because I was like, what the heck is Y choose? I don't even know what that is. So like, I paid no mind to it. But now that I know, I'm like, I don't think I like that either. I'm like, no, I just want decisions to be made for me. I don't want there to be like all the things, like, no, I just love love. Like, stop loving like multiple people, I guess.
Just pick. I'm watching The Buccaneers on Apple TV, and there's a love triangle that is stressing me out so badly that I had to look up the end of the first season, because I was like, if I don't look up how this ends, I'm gonna stay up all night watching it. And it was already like 4 a.m. and I was like, I can't do it. I need to know how this ends, because I need to know who to root for. I need to know who I need to know if I'm rooting for the right person. But I guess that's how you know it's well written, when you're like, oh my God, this is stressing me out. Like, I don't think I'll watch the next season of The Summer I Turned Pretty. Because I feel like it's hard to root for either of them. In The Buccaneers, I'm like, oh my God, either of them would be a good match for her. Like, they do a really good job at like showing the pros and cons. So I do not like love triangles, but when they're well done, I don't mind them, especially TV. I feel like I would not read a book about a love triangle, but TV and movies, I feel like I mind it.
Yeah, that was me with Jane the Virgin. I hate love triangles, but like I was like, he's got history. I love him, but he's the baby daddy.
I forgot about that show. That made me think of, I was talking to Issa because I am in obviously the very early stages of like writing a book, and I decided to like kind of like somewhat publicly mention it so that now I can't go back. That's basically like, that's like kind of part of it. And I was like, I always update Issa on like what's happening, my ideas for the like the plot or whatever, just so she can like, I don't know, sometimes it helps like bounce like a new idea off, or she'll be like, that's actually terrible. Or she'll just, honestly, everything, she just told me that she loves it, so it's fine. But then she was like, OMG, a love triangle, to like something I told her. And I was like, no. I can see why you're saying that. And I was like, and I guess it's kind of like choose your own adventure. Like, you can find yourself getting in situations where you're like, is this about to be a love triangle? But like, for me, I'm like, I need to not go down that path.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I couldn't.
Like, accidental love triangle.
Yeah. Well, I feel like it's hard. I remember in the very early stages of No Coincidences, like, at a point where it looked totally different than it does now, like, not even the same book, Luke was more of a threat to Hallie and Rhys' relationship. Like, it was a little bit more of a love triangle. But then I was like, I can't do this because it's so, like, why even include this? Because it's so obvious that Reed is the right person for her. Like, why even include that? We all know. Hallie knows, Reed knows, Luke knows, like the characters know. So why would I even try to like amplify this relationship? So I feel like unless you're at a point where you like literally have, oh my gosh, what is like the prequel to The Mortal Instruments where there's the big love triangle? I don't know. I don't remember the name.
I have not read those.
Only just started reading as an adult. I did not read as a child.
There's this really well done love triangle. And I only read the book. I never read any of the other Mortal Instruments books, but the girl's name is Tessa, so I read it because name twin.
When you're the main character.
Yeah, main character energy. And she's like, I don't even remember what the plot is, but there's a really well done love triangle. So I feel like unless you go into like your writing process, like this is a love triangle, you can't go back. Like the reader's gonna know.
Right.
Characters now.
That's so true. I can't think of like, now I'm like, wait, what other tropes do I like? Like, favorite?
No.
Honestly, I think I've just discovered that Second Chance is elite in romance.
Second Chance is elite. Whatever Percy and Annabeth are in Percy Jackson, elite. I don't know what to call them because some people are like enemies to lovers, but I'm like, they're more like they bicker, but I wouldn't say they're enemies.
It's like also, old married couple.
Old married couple, yes. Like 13-year-olds who act like old married couples. That's my brand. And so Percy and Annabeth, Ron and Hermione, like those are all, I've always been drawn to like those types of relationships that like have a lot of history, and especially I feel like in like fantasy or sci-fi where, you know, they're like on death's door and they're fighting and it's like all the tension, it's great. But that's also those are both like very long series with a lot of time to develop. So I don't know what I would call that, but I love that. I've been loving the new Percy Jackson show. And every time anything happens between Percy and Annabeth, I'm like, this is gonna slay in an edit in 5 years when we have clips from all the other books. Like, I'm ready, I'm prepared. I'm watching history in real time.
Yes. Oh my gosh, I know. I have no idea why I love fake dating so much. I just do. I love fake dating, especially when it's like enemies to lovers slash, fake dating slash like forced proximity. Because to me, they're kind of the same thing. Because it's like, no, you have to be close to one another, even if you don't like each other. It's like, now you're learning more about each other, even though you don't want to know anything about her. Oh my gosh. And now you're like starting to like those little things about her that used to annoy you. Oh my, now you're in love. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, surprise, you're in love. Yeah, there may be some, I won't call it fake dating, but there may be a fake date in my second book.
Oh, I love it already.
Jeez. So
squealing on the inside.
Yeah.
So giddy. I love it.
I think the challenge with fake dating is to find a believable circumstance that you would ever fake date someone. Especially in like contemporary books. But it's my little, that's my gift to you.
I love my love language is gifting. No.
I know, I was just about to say, Sam.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. No, that's so exciting. And I also, I was thinking about the whole like forced proximity fake dating thing. Like Issa was saying, she loves it when they don't like each other and they're put together like that. It's almost okay for me. I like it when that happens because I love like the like redemption aspect, or like when like the character that you're closer to as a reader, I guess, like when you see their dislike of the other person so closely, but you get to kind of like watch that character redeem themselves like through like little things as they start to like realize, oh, this person is not actually as insufferable as I thought they were. And like I love that process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, that's my favorite micro trope. No.
No, okay, honestly, that like thinking about it now, like Sam, earlier we were like microtrips being just like a smaller version of it or whatever, I don't remember exactly what you said, but like how one bed is like microtrope of big trope, forced proximity. I feel like that's like fake dating, you know, because if you're fake dating, you're not just gonna like not be around this person. No, you have to be around this person. You have to like show off and be like, hey, we're dating. Anyways, just a thought.
Yeah,
great thought. Wow. Well, I'm glad we gave some positive like takes and thoughts about tropes after tearing them to shreds in the beginning.
I'd like to think that we aren't tearing the tropes to shreds, but
right,
the way people use talk them. About them.
Yeah. We're critiquing.
Yes. We're commenting.
Yes.
Social commentary.
Yes. Very, like, why does this... I have not thought about this, like, word in forever, but, like, it's in, like, high school English classes, like, doing, like, Socratic seminars. Like, all of a sudden, I was like, we are having one of those.
A Socratic seminar on trips. And you know what? I feel like a lot of my English professors would appreciate it. That's the other thing about, I don't know a single adult who would know any of, like, well, I mean, I guess we are adults, but, like, you know, I don't know anyone over the age of, like, 35 that would understand the conversation we've had.
Yes. I actually, I had a note when we first drafted notes for this episode, and I deleted it because I was like, this actually seems really aggressive, because I wrote, like, genuine curiosity. Is there an English classroom somewhere teaching people microtropes? Because, the answer is no. I, like, wrote that down, and I was like, that seems a little aggressive. So then I was like, I'll make my curiosity appear differently.
Yeah. No, I mean, this would be my final negative thought. I mean, it's not even negative. It's just like, not that everything that school is being done in schools and academic institutions is good. Like, there's a lot to say about like academia. But I don't know any, I've never been as an undergrad student, I've never been like discouraged from like writing about romance or writing about young women's issues. And like, I really think that my education has impacted the way I write romance. And so the fact that you're only hearing this online, like microtropes, all this stuff, it should be considered. Like, it's not like, oh, academia just hates romance novels. I mean, some of them do. I'm sure some people have different experiences than me, but you know, maybe think about it. If it's not, if you can't find anything on JSTOR about it, maybe write it yourself or take a step back. You know,
you credited with the first ever article on JSTOR about microtropes.
That's gonna be my thesis. Yeah,
that's my article. My 2024
Shakespeare
prediction.
Fan fiction. Yeah, I'm gonna. Maybe.
Fan fiction, taking me back to like the Imagines too.
Oh my god, short
fan fiction.
Oh, YN.
Okay, embarrassing story. Honesty hour. For my friend's birthdays, when we were like 12, 13, I would write imagines for my friends. About like their favorite member of like One Direction or Justin Bieber.
That's
or whatever.
So brave of you, because I hit in my friend, like I Tumblr, Wattpad, like I never talked, like I was like, so embarrassing, and I never talked about it. Fanfiction.net, like saved, bookmarked on like my old iPad, and I would like hide it.
Yeah, luckily I was not the only psycho One Direction fan of my friends. There was like three of us, two of us.
Man, that's so funny.
That is hilarious. I would have loved getting an Imagine for my birthday.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, now I know what to ask for.
Why weren't we friends before we were 20 years old? That's so horrible of the universe.
Honestly, and like in my head, I was like, this is so good. And then I'd be like, I'll try writing a fanfic. I was like, I can't do it. I can only write one scene.
And that's why the Imagines are so great. Let's bring those back.
Yes, wait, actually.
What if I publish a series of Imagine?
Imagine. Okay, and I love that they're called Imagines, because like they all start with Imagine. Like, here's your Niall Horan Imagine. Imagine you and
No, it's incredible. You know, I could talk about fan fiction forever, but it is incredible that it would be like Imagine. Like, you know, it's you're imagining it. The writer knows you're imagining it. We all know that this isn't real. There is no suspension of disbelief. Like, we all know that this is fake, and it's incredible. It's art. It's great.
Man, let's bring 2012, 2013 core back.
I think we should. You and Boren.
I think it's part of like why. So like sometimes on the podcast I'll say like, get this, or like I'll say hear me out, and then he's just like, I'm waiting. But like, it's kind of that same vibe.
Imagine.
Oh my gosh, I love ending on that. That is like the perfect like end to this episode. It's just us like
imagine
remembering the better times of. Yeah. Fanfic.
Back when tropes were just AO3 tags and life was simpler.
Right. Love.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So fun. Oh my gosh. Tessa, we love having episodes with you.
I love being here. Thanks for having me.
You know, three Zoom calls.
Three Zoom.
Okay, listen. Listen.
We did it.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so of course we have to end this episode with our favorite segment, our favorite little part, song of the week. Personally, I did not have a song of the week ready, so I did in fact go look for one while we were recording, so hopefully y'all are ready.
Oh,
Sam, because you're first.
All right, yes. Oh, me hoping that me going on Spotify would help me and show me what I'm currently listening to, but I'm actually listening to the newest episode of Likewise.
Oh,
just
my
to
God.
You know, see what it sounds like.
Imagine you're listening to your own podcast.
I have a really silly song of the week. My song of the week, well, I guess song of the day for the sake of this week, is Downtown by Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, because I was listening on like my work trip to like just like 2000s songs, and for some reason I cannot remember what song it was that came on, but there was something in that song that made me think of Downtown, and I was trying to like talk about it earlier today, and so I started listening to that song a bunch, and then like listening to a bunch of songs to try and find it. And the best thing I could find was that Macklemore actually got taken to court for this. They thought that he sampled the Safety Dance song from like the 80s. But then the court actually ruled in favor with Macklemore because he did not actually use a sample. But music court case fact for you today with my song of the week.
Yeah, the more you know.
Right. Tessa, what's yours?
Okay, my song of the week is Court and Spark by Joni Mitchell. I don't have a reason. I love Joni Mitchell. That's all.
I love that.
My reason.
Oh my gosh, that's so fun. Mine is Reckless Driving by Lizzie McAlpine and Ben Kessler.
Great.
And Ben Kessler, not just
Lizzie. Right, credit where it's due.
Yeah.
Love. That's a great
song. Banger.
What is a banger? It stresses me out when I listen to it. I can't listen to it while I drive, though, because I feel like it's like bad karma.
Yeah, and when it like builds and it's getting a little intense. Yeah.
It's so intense. It's great.
That's a car crash song for sure. Sorry to people who have probably crashed their car to that song. It's not gonna be me.
Yeah, couldn't catch me listening to that in the car.
That would be embarrassing.
Okay, I feel like since we ended on Imagines, I have to share my favorite Imagine ever. Okay, because it's memorized because I will never forget it because it's kind of like a joke one. If you guys have ever seen it, it's a Niall Horan Imagine. And it's like,
of course,
imagine
when you're Niall girl.
Imagine Niall Horan crawling in your ear, and then it's like, that's like all it is, basically. Okay, there's a picture with it too. It's so funny, but it's just like, you tell him to stop, but you can't get him out. Like, that's the vibe of this Imagine.
She said, "This is my favorite Imagine. I have it memorized." Yes, because it's three words.
Yeah, it's very short. Like, it's not a story. Okay, I found the exact picture. Imagine Niall Horan crawling inside your ear. You tell him to stop, but he is in there. That's all it is, but he's in there. These fonts. Okay, the fonts are, like, actually getting me so bad.
I'll be thinking
right
that all week.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I cannot wait for the promo content for this episode. instead of microtrips, can we do Imagines for books?
I think
no, I was thinking about it. Imagine. I'll make some for Reed.
Yeah.
I'll promo No Coincidences with an Imagine.
Oh my gosh.
That's like my dream. Like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm like,
But it has to be things that don't happen in the book. Yeah. Also, like, because like I'm simply making these up off of just like my perception of this character.
And that's what's beautiful about it. Exactly.
Love it.
That's,
oh my gosh,
such a great
I'm so
end.
Excited. What a great way to end this episode. Oh my gosh. Imagine.
This is so funny. We don't even have to do an outro.
Just end it.
Imagine it ends right now.
And it ended. That's perfect. I think it's perfect.
Oh my gosh, no, but seriously, Tessa, thank you so much for doing this, for having a conversation with us again. Loved it.
For having
and
me.
For so long. I did not.
Yeah.
I was like, we're going to save her time this time. I was like, this 40 minute thing, not a problem. Let's just keep the episode short.
You should have known better. It's okay. Like, it's
it was
okay.
A big
now
problem.
We know for next
we know.
Time. We know that this is the standard.
Yes. True.
These episodes are our virtual Valentines from us to you.
We hope you have a new book for your never-ending TBR, a new song to add to your playlist, and a new indie author to follow on Instagram.
And as always, we would love if you left us a rate and review on whatever stream platform you use. And if you want more from us, you can find us on Instagram at likewise_pod. This was so much fun, and I hope you both have a lovely rest of your day.
Thanks, Issa, and likewise to you all.
Lots of love.
And remember, look fab, feel fab.